Father Michael, you have recently celebrated 40 years of being a priest. So first of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, on the 8th of June, 40 years of priest. And we had a large gathering that day, a circle of friends. And funny enough, it's not the 40 years that impacted me at all on that particular day. I think what I was thinking mostly that day, that all the people who had influenced me or people I met or people who were great friends for me, that they would meet each other and that there'd be conversations all around the gathering place, little community, a community of communities that day. And that was my hope for that particular day. It's very hard to put 40 years in focus, really, or what happened.
And has the priesthood, has the role of the priest changed a lot in those 40 years? Do you find that the priesthood is the same role that you went into 40 years ago?
I don't know, but what I feel I've changed in myself now, I feel that I love just being with people now. I've been love being with younger people. I'm sort of feel the, kind of the avuncular type. I'm the uncle or the granduncle now to people, you know, half my age, third my age, and I feel more at ease with them and more at ease with myself being with them. If I had my life to live over again, I think I would opt for priesthood. I'm saying this now, this mature time in my life, because I was saying, I would say I wouldn't have been able for the sacrifices of marriage and the demands and the self-sacrifice and the selflessness of marriage, always trying to think of the other. I'm sure it wouldn't have worked that way. You'd have gone through the romance and fallen in love and engaged and married, etc. But just looking back, that's what I say now. My parents, yeah, my father was very deeply prayerful. My mother would be more a social conscience, but she was always wondering and questioning about life and about afterlife and everything like that. And she would have inspired me, certainly. I'm grateful to them both, but grateful also to all the good people that they brought into our home. And I'd have an aunt too who's alive, thank God. She's a Clooney sister. She was a great influence in my life when I was 9 to 12 years of age. And then she went back to the West Indies. And then when she came back, I was 20. I was qualified as a teacher. And she brought books to me on relationship and marriage then. So she's probably thinking that's the way I'm heading. But already my mind had gone back to when I was 9 to 12. So
it's funny you talk there about relationship and marriage and comparing it to being a priest. And you say that in a sense, priesthood was the easier choice, or in some ways it was the choice that allowed you to live the way that you wanted to live.
Yeah, yes, I enjoy being a priest, funny enough.
I'm just saying that because a lot of people would see not being able to get married as maybe a barrier or a reason that they wouldn't choose a life of a priesthood.
Yeah, I suppose we always have our struggles with celibacy. Always, it hasn't, you know, hasn't been easy all along. Of course you would have those desires, but I've been so blessed that when I was with young men in teacher training college and then went through and they formed relationships, and I celebrated their marriage, the fellows from my year with me, I always felt very secure in the company of a married couple. And I was aware that they were keeping vows very much like I was trying to keep vows. We always say that we have poverty, chastity, obedience. And I hear in the marriage, you know, for better, for worse. For worse, and we never emphasize that, for richer, for poorer, imagine for poorer, in sickness and in health. I mean, that's really vowing poverty or promising poverty. Do you mean those things? And then you say obedience, you say, oh, well, don't talk about obedience in marriage. Well, if we say if obedience is all about dearie, listening deeply, couples have to listen beyond words. I think I'm watching that poverty, chastity, obedience, and of course they have to live, you know, in a way, a beautiful love, a love, you know, a spiritual love, a love that's beyond sexual love as well, many times in their lives. So I think in the presence of a married couple, I feel so secure as a celibate. I see the value in celibate love, definitely. You would love to have, you know, the love of Jesus Christ and his love. I think of people like Jean Vanier. I think of people who are very, We don't have the love of Jesus Christ. We're always trying to refine and purify it. We say, blessed are the pure in heart. And I say that is, blessed are those whose hearts have been refined, chastened, and whose love is deepened in the crucible of life and living. And so I suppose that's what you'd aspire to. And there are moments where I would be totally at peace and at ease and secure, as I say, again, in the presence of a couple who have promised each other, to each other, who have promised themselves to each other in marriage.
And, well, we interviewed a Jesuit previously, and he liked to go out on a motorbike, like yourself. And, you know, he said that he would say, oh, I'm going out cycling this Saturday. Do any of you want to come? And all his married friends would have to say, oh, I have to ask. So he felt in some ways that he had more freedom. So in some ways, there is also a freedom that comes with not having that, you know, permanent tie to another person.
Yeah, yeah, there is that. That's interesting, all right. Yes, I'm always aware when I talk to my married friends, the guys say, well, I better check with Marie or Anne or whoever it is, you know, better check with her. And I say, oh, gee, yeah, I'm so independent here. At the same time, I wouldn't like to be sort of a bachelor, you know, sort of a bachelor celibate. I would like to think it's more potent than that. And it's not just for freedom to be able to come and go. There is certainly a freedom of, but then you have to keep developing this sense of freedom, I suppose, and saying, can you have the same love for all the people in your gathering and your circle of friends, and keep developing that, you know, that's not an excluding or exclusive love, you know, it has to be inclusive, and that's always the challenge, whatever loves you form in your life.
And you did an awful lot of work. You did different. You spoke about your ministry with the Travelers. You've worked in prisons. You've worked abroad. You've really worked all over.
Yeah, I feel the Lord, you know, I feel so blessed that way. I did my first 6 years in a community school. It was a co-educational school, multi-denominational. Then the next 6 years with the Traveling People, that was a great privilege, certainly. And again, I've many, many, many stories of where I was called to conversion in that work. Then I did 2 years in New York. I was studying then, but I also worked with men with AIDS in Sing Sing Prison. And I was like working in a milieu of death. And they certainly taught me so many, many things. And even in that milieu of death, I found life, found joy. And I did 7 years in parish missions around Ireland and Britain. And again, I often go into towns and I have great memories of moments of conversion, one-on-one conversions that nobody will ever know about. And then I did 6 years with the Daughters of Charity in Britain as spiritual director, and that brought me to Ethiopia, Sierra Leone, Romania, and then 2001 back to Ireland with Young Adult Ministry. And we began a work towards for young volunteers to go to Ethiopia, and also a little group called the Micah Community in St. Peter's Footsboro. I was 2 years parish priest when the opportunity came to come to Maynooth as spiritual director. So I feel at the end of my days, it's a great privilege to give something back to men who are aspiring to priesthood. It's great to journey with them, to be able to share from my own story, my own journey, and encourage them. And challenge them too, and have myself challenged also by their example. So at this stage, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else just now. It's like the circle's coming around full circle, and I say, this is my last chance for personal conversion. If I'm not converted, working with men, studying, aspiring to be priests, I'll never be converted.
And in terms of what you would say to them, because they're potentially heading into 40 years themselves, maybe more, maybe less, but they're going into a very different atmosphere, maybe, to what you would have gone into as a priest. Or do you sense that? Are there more doubts, hesitancies, questions?
Yeah, they're going. I mean, I'd often say to young people today, you know, I was never your age. You know, you often heard it when I was young, people say, when I was your age, etc. I was never their age. I was never their age in 2014. I didn't come into a world. I wasn't ministering in the world that they're now going into. I think there will be a greater loneliness today facing these men. I think they have to be able to be alone with the alone. I would encourage them always to be strict on themselves, but always compassionate with others. If they want to be strict with themselves, but be compassionate with others and try and develop the love of God the Father to allow people to go astray and believe that they'll come back. That's what I've experienced myself in my own priesthood. And the other thing I'll always encourage them to do is to say, tell it as it is. Open your hands and say, this is me. We all make mistakes. We're all vulnerable. But if you name it, then you begin to grow.